Great morning, great morning, great morning. You know what time it is. That's right. It's time for your favorite talk show with your favorite talk show host, The Culture Call with L. Spencer Smith right here on Praise 93.3 790 WTSK, The Truth. And guess what? This is the place where Tuscaloosa meets the world. And for the next 2 hours, from 10 a.m. all the way to 12 p.m., we're going to be talking a little bit about everything from society to sports, education to economics, from religion to relationships. And as always, always, y'all, this is my promise. This will be a safe space to have empowering, provocative, and yes, even sometimes controversial conversations. And guess what? We're going to learn right here together and chat it up as we go throughout the day talking about what we need to talk about right here on The Culture Call. Listen, y'all know what time it is. It's shout out time. It's one of my favorite times of the show. Shout out number one to all of our first time listeners right here on The Culture Call. Man, I tell you, I am so glad and grateful that you are here with the CC family, and I don't know how you got here. I don't know who told you about us, but guess what? I'm so super glad that you are definitely here with us, and whoever told you, you owe them a free breakfast, lunch, or dinner because they have done you a solid today. It's going to be a great, great day. So glad to have you on board. Find your seat, buckle up. We're about to take off. Shout out number two to all of our faithful, consistent, committed, hey, what can I say, listeners. You have been with us from day one, and I'm so grateful, and you continue to grow and you continue to stick with us. And when you see me in the streets, you always give me dap and give me a hug, encourage me, and let me know that what I'm doing for the community really matters. And you don't know how much that resonates in the bottom of my heart. I'm so glad and grateful for that. Hey, but I tell you what, you know what to do. Go ahead and find you a seat, buckle up. We're about to take off in just a few moments. Hey, that's right. And then last but not least, shout out number three to the man with the plan, our great-headed sage brother, Jay. Come on, that's right. Give it up for him wherever you are. He is the man with the plan that leads us from 5 a.m. all the way up to the 10 o'clock hour. And I'm telling you, playing the blessed, best and good, great gospel, inspirational music, some throwbacks. Yeah, I'm telling you, he blesses our day, encourages us, gives us words of wisdom, and kind of gives us a little gas for our engine to make it throughout the day. And so we are very grateful for him, for us. And we're glad to be on his team, actually, because he's the one that leads us to be the award winning. That's right. Praise 93, 790 WTSK. It's through his leadership and all of those things encouraging us. And here we go again. We're about to do it again. Hopefully at the Stella Awards again. But it's all through his leadership. And we are glad and grateful, definitely, for him. Listen, do me a favor. If you have not done so already, go to your app store on your Apple or your Android device, your smartphone, and when you get to the app store, type in the search bar Praise 93.3 FM, and there you're going to see an app. Do me a favor, go ahead and download that on your phone. That's right, it is with that app you can listen to and put your ear pods in and earbuds in, your little earphones in, and no matter what you're doing, you can be a part of the great things and the great sounds of what's happening here at Praise 93.3 FM and 790 WTSK. And you won't miss a beat. That's right. You can be at your office, your cubicle. You can be driving in your car. You can be on vacation, clean up the house, whatever you're doing. But yeah, that app makes it possible for you to be a part of the amazing things that's going on here at Praise 93. That's right. From what's going on in the athletics, what's going on in politics, what's going on in the church world, current events, different shows from Brother Jay early in the morning. The Culture Call with myself, Minister Chris, Sister Sandra, Lady Darlene at night. Listen, whatever it is, I'm telling you, it is right on that app. Weather, definitely, because this weather has been crazy, hasn't it? Yeah. But yeah, you can always get into that, always have highlights. You definitely need to get that app. So go ahead and do that right now. So no matter where you are, you could be in Charlotte, North Carolina. You could be in Greenville, South Carolina. You could be in Jacksonville, Florida, or right here in the beautiful city of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Mobile, Birmingham, Montgomery, Huntsville, Boulder G, Aliceville. Yeah, that's right. You could be in Aliceville, Utah, Demopolis, wherever you are. If you've got that app, you can listen to us and you can be a part of what we're doing here. Hey, do me a favor again. Allow me to be a part of your marketing public relations team by emailing your events and what's going on in your organizations at culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com. Shout out to all of you all have done that. And we have them coming in little by little, but they are coming in. Go ahead, culturecall.praise@gmail.com, and give me an opportunity to let Lottie and Dottie and everybody know the amazing things that's going on in your church, your organization, your sororities, your fraternities, whether you're an artist getting ready to have a concert or a preacher getting ready to run a revival, church anniversaries, whatever it is. Give me an opportunity to let everyone know the wonderful things that you are doing and planning in our community so that we can put some faces in the place so you won't be there by yourself. Absolutely. You know why? Because that's just a little part of doing it, that saying that we do it better when we do it together. And of course, you can write down the golden number, 205-752-4800. That's 205-752-4800. And you can call into the show. And I know that most of you, whenever you see me, you say, I can't call in. But here's what you can do. I understand, because it's at 10 to 12. I get it. You're at work. I get it. But here it is. You can also get on that chat. If you get the app, you can get on the chat. You can type in what you want to say. You can send the chat directly to me. I'll read it when I'm on the air. It comes directly to my email. And we can talk about what you want to talk about from that chat feature. So you got to make sure that you download the app. I just want to hear from you. Hey, do me a favor. Sit back and relax. Grab you some coffee. Maxwell House of Starbucks. You know how we do it. Seven Brews drinkers and Dunkin' drinkers. You can get in there too. Wherever you're drinking some coffee, you can get in here as well. Slide on in. But maybe coffee is not your thing. You can get in. You can get you some herbal tea. Yeah, chamomile if you're trying to calm down, and green tea if you need a little caffeine kick to help you make it to lunchtime. That's right. Green tea is good, and it's a medicinal tea. It helps your body as well. But maybe you also like hibiscus. That's red, tart, tangy tea. Put a little stevia in it, and it is good for everything that ails you. But maybe coffee and tea are not your things. You know how we do it. We got to have some agua. We got to have some water. And whether that's spring, distilled, alkaline, doesn't matter what it is, get it in your body. Hydrate. Wake those cells up, and come on, let's get into the culture. We got a great day planned for you today, because I want to talk and focus on our community today, because I want to make sure that as we approach the times that we are living in, that we are moving circumspect with regards to how we are to respond to all of the things that are going on politically and societally, culturally, and definitely from a religious context. We as a community have to have an answer, right? So many things are going on at a fever pitch at all at one time. And again, I remember in a day that you used to be able to just, you know, turn on your TV and just look at news and find out what's going on around the world. And news would go off, and you'd be back to look watching game shows, or, you know, your favorite stories, or your favorite evening soaps, or whatever, afternoon soaps, whatever it was. But now, because of the 24-hour news cycle, and it seems like, especially in this administration, they come up with things that, I don't know, he doesn't sleep. The man doesn't sleep, and that's dangerous. He does, you know, I don't know if he's sundowning or whatever is happening, but he's, you know, he's up tweeting, he's doing something always. And so when you wake up in the morning, there's just this cycle of tumult, this cycle of conundrum, this cycle of something that he's thrown against the wall, against a certain group of people, an organization, a country, you know. And it can get tiring. And if you're not careful, it can definitely unravel you. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about as we close out this Mental Health Awareness Month is I want to shine a light on our community, right? I want to make sure that we are building the village that can take care of all of us who want to be taken care of. And the reason why I add that last part as a caveat, because there are just, unfortunately, some people that don't want to be taken care of or want to be a part of the community, even though they look like you and I. They have purchased for themselves a particular philosophy or an ideology that, you know, how we look doesn't matter. It's how we merit. And if that were the truth about this country and truth about this city, of truth about the state, rather, yeah, we wouldn't even be talking about half of what we're talking about. But we know, those of us who are lucid, those of us who are cogent, know that that's not how this has been, especially in the South, especially in Alabama, in places like Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, especially in those places, you know, that are deemed the South and the Deep South. We have a different narrative. We have a different understanding. We have a different biography of the South, not just in past, but in present, and prayerfully that we can come together to change it for the future, because we've got children and grandchildren that are on the way, and we have to do our very best to make certain that we do the work now so that what the world that they come into will not be the world that is full of animus, that full of oppression, full of marginalization, full of a weak economy, full of imperialistic violence and religious corroboration and collaboration with the empire. We've got to make sure that we make the world a better place, right? And so if indeed the children are the future, then we as the community then have to begin to build infrastructure that begins to address certain things with regards to the community. We've got to talk about education. We've got to talk about relationships. We've got to talk about faith as well. We've got to talk about the family unit. We've got to talk about the new dynamics on marriage. We've got to talk about, you know, the necessity of birth and children in our community, because I was reading an article, Culture Call, and it astounded me that the article said that there was one time when children were a necessity, but now children are an option. They are feature to marriage. They are features to family. And that's because the society and the culture has changed so very much that, yeah, they're not having big families now. They're not even trying to think about having children, right? And, you know, they might have 2-3 at max. But a large family now in this country is like 4 and 5. And, you know, I grew up in a time when my grandparents had 8, 9, 10, 15, 16, 20 kids. And, you know, but it was an agrarian society. It was a different time. And so the view of children in this country is being looked at totally different, right? We're now having to fight against the pedophile. We're having to fight against it. I'm talking about as a real thing. It used to happen in the dark. Incest and things of those natures, molestation and kidnapping used to happen in the dark. But as the rise of the Epstein files and all of these, if you watch, especially in the upper Western countries, that they're trying to legalize child marriage and decrease the age of all of these things, child labor, they want to return it. You know, that was pre-industrial revolution, all these different kinds of things. They want to bring it back. And this is what they think makes America great again. So we're dealing with people that are absolutely historically ignorant. But in that, they've changed the metric of importance of our community and our families, right? And so in a minute, marriage won't become important. In a minute, especially in our community, where I believe that it is a plan, a tactic, and a strategy to keep men and women fighting in our community. I believe that black men fighting white black women and black women fighting white men, black men, excuse me, and then all of these other kinds of things are happening. That I believe that is a collaborated effort to break up family, to make sure that we don't come together by any means necessary, because that's a part of the strategy of supremacy. It is to make sure that they conquer by division. And the sacred text, the Bible, tells us that, you know, a house that is divided against itself cannot stand. And so, again, they've taken that whole idea and amplified it. And Culture Call have made, you know, husbands against wives, fathers against sons, mothers against daughters. It's a whole lot of animus, a whole lot of disconnection, just rejecting relationships that have been valuable and to our lives for growth, for wisdom, for protection, for stability, all of these different kinds of things that this country it fears. And I hate to say it like this, Culture Club, but I need you to lean into this. This country fears the multi-generational black family now. That's facts. Just look at it. This country really has targeted the multi-generational black family. And it didn't just start, but I'm saying that, you know, we're not promoting marriage as we used to. We're not promoting, you know, child bearing. It just used to be an honor to talk about those things. But with prices going up, the economy shifting more to the 1%, to the those allowances that brought equilibrium and egalitarianism to our country, i.e. affirmative action, diversity, equity, and inclusion, giving everybody their fair shot despite their color, despite their race. But just putting us all on a level playing field, that they're overturning that, and they're doing it in such a creative way, not even a creative way, but they're doing it in such a way that their loss of their privilege, in terms of supremacy, the loss of privilege is turning them to people who are victims, and they are exploiting the victimization like never before. I'm telling you, they are exploiting it like never before. And here's the deal. We have to have an answer. And as I've been surveying, because a lot of people say, well, Bishop, You keep talking about XYZ and ABC, but yeah, why is that? Why don't we talk about how we can come together? Well, now, first of all, that's all I do. So obviously you've not been listening to the Culture Call. But number two, there are people who look like you and I who have bought into the franchise of proximity to supremacy. Proximity to supremacy is protection for them. I know the Hispanic community has done that. There are some in the African American community have done that. I know the Asian community has done that. And when you do all of the studies, we find out that at the end of that particular connection to supremacy, the only thing that supremacy wants to protect is its supremacy, right? And so they want to protect that whiteness. They want to protect the and they call it Americanism. And so it's really crazy. And so one of the things that, you know, not just me, but, you know, pastors and preachers, we cannot afford to lose our voice. Community leaders, we cannot afford to lose our imaginations and our visions for our community to make us better in spite of what they're trying to do. Right. We see it. We discern it. But we have to strategize concerning it. We've got to strategize for it. We can't just see it happen and not say anything, and not just say, but not construct, or not put something pencil to paper and begin to sketch out what we need to do and how we need to move for our future. And so I think that's important. And it starts in the molecular level of community. It starts on the atomic level of family, right? So we have to understand that we have responsibility in our community. And I know some people don't like that because they live a life of blame. They live a life of, if this didn't happen to me, it's been happening and our families thrived. It's been happening and we built HBCUs. It's been happening and the black church was getting stronger. It's been happening and we created businesses and we created our own movements. It has been happening, right? And so we are basically the only people in this country historically who have the narrative of overcoming the structural policies against us in this country. And it's happening now as well. From 1619 to 1776, we fought for countries during our country during the Union, during the Civil War. We fought for it during the American Revolution. And still Black African American people are still trying to say, hey, but don't you think you owe us some rights, right? Don't you think you owe us reparation for building the country, but you're going to give it to people who tore up the country? And so it is direct animus that is against our communities. But here it is. We can thrive. We will thrive. Yes, we will definitely thrive because God has given us a great creativity. But not part of our creativity is how we create and construct community, right? It is how we work together. It is how we collaborate. It is how we see the sum total in the synergistic gifting of everybody. It is how we overcome denominationalism and not say, well, you Baptist or you Methodist, and we don't have nothing to do with the Lutheran, and we don't have nothing to do with the Pentecostals. No, absolutely not. We just this past Sunday was Pentecost, and it was one of the things that the Pentecost opens up with is unification. It and they were all in one place and all in one accord. And when they opened up their mouths, they began to speak in languages of the known languages of the people that were in that place. So it was a collaboration of the world. It was a global collaboration of the known world at that time. And so that's part of the gifting of, I believe that God has not just given humans, but definitely given Black people, that we need to put down our swords and create them into plowshares so that we can start digging and building and sowing and creating and constructing again for the things that need to be done, right? That's very important. That, you know, there's a cry that's out by the NAACP that says that they're charging the Black athletes that attend SEC schools that have disenfranchised voters that have written out the Black voice to not go to those SEC schools. But the counter narrative of that is, and I don't have a way in on that, you know, at least not yet, but I don't have a way in on that because I don't know enough. I haven't read the research. I haven't read but really what they're basing it on beyond the overturning and the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, especially Section 2. I don't know all of the ins and outs and the particularities of the stance of the NAACP. But what I can say is if you're expecting that to happen, then we are going to have to place some funding back in our HBCUs. We got to build programs. We got to make sure that they have the right stadiums, the right lockers. We got to provide NILs because NILs are reality today. We can't just say leave them and then what? Right? There's got to be a strategy. And so we got to move from reactionaryism to a place where we sit down and we say, here is the plan. This, we have to have our own Project 2025 for our community, right? Let me say it again. We've got to start building and pulling together our own Project 2025. We've got scholars, we've got lawyers, we've got doctors, we've got people that have studied them just like they have studied us in order to create that document, because the person that created that document has a specialization in African American history and studies and behavior patterns. So they studied this a while before they've released Project 2025. Well, we have the same kind of people that are doing that. We have theologians, practical and public theologian. That's becoming big in our community. They're not just getting theological degrees to operate in the church, but they're getting theological degrees that also know how to address the systems and the policies with regards to the marketplace, right? That predominantly European thinkers are in public theology, which is one of the reasons why I decided to get my PhD in public theology, because I want to be one of those voices that not just shape the church. I've been doing that for over 30 years. But there is a notion now that there needs to be another layer to the conversation. There's another level of stratification to what our voices need to address. And we, Martin Luther King, James Cone, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, all of the great thinkers, those were people who were not public theologians, even though they addressed the public. But now we're getting into a space to where we are public theologians so that we can stand on the soapbox provided by society and begin to deal with and go in between and create a nexus between the marketplace and ministry and begin to tell the truth about that from an academically and theologically legitimate place. Okay, good. That's kind of what I want to say. But there's so much preparation that has to go on in our communities in order for us to address so many different things, right? You can't fight for gender equality. You can't fight for women and then you disallow them in the pulpits in your churches, because there is nothing in the text that says that. Not one single solitary thing. Right. There is nothing that's cultural. That is cultural and denominational, but that is not biblical. But you can't in one instance say, you know, my wife and my daughter deserve autonomy over their own body. But then come back and says that God don't call her to preach. God doesn't call her to pastor. She's not called to lead. All these different kinds. So we've got a lot of work to do in our community. We can't just use the LGBTQ community in our choirs, in our finance, in our creative arts community, and not at least address their space or their positionality in the fullness of what we do in community, especially in religious community, right? Else we become hypocrites, right? Because if they're not qualified for one space, they're not qualified for another. I mean, that's just reality. And again, I'm not casting aspersions upon anybody, but I'm just saying that we've got to begin to operate with equal hands, and our theology and our ideology has to become equal, right? And so in one hand, you can't be pro-life but have nothing to say about Gaza, about the genocide, killing children and babies in Palestine, separating them and sending them to Alcatraz. You ain't got nothing to say about that. All of these things, but you're just pro-life. You pro-life, but then you won't support SNAP. You won't support, you know, children getting fed free lunch and free breakfast, you know, as if we can pay for wars that don't make any sense, we definitely can pay for everybody, especially children, to have health care. We can pay for them to have food to eat. We can pay for them to have houses, decent houses to stay, right? So we're making excuses in this country that we really need to stop making. Because when you live in a hypocrisy for so long, hear me, Culture Call, and I want to say this definitely in our community. When you live in a hypocrisy for so long, what happens is that hypocrisy begins to normalize itself, and you begin to generationally teach that hypocrisy as normalization, right? So much so that it will be hypocrisy in one generation, but two generations removed, it will be just how things are, right? But it's hypocrisy. It is. It is blatant hypocrisy, right? And so there are things that we've got to begin to strategize. We've got to talk about how we fund education and fund after-school programming. We got to talk about how do we address these young people that are apathetic. And I believe we can do it, that don't care or don't see a bright future, and they're making the decisions to sabotage your future. We can talk about those things, and I think that we have a particular duty to do so. And so, yes, while we are contemplating and celebrating, we also need to collaborate as community so that we can be ready, because we're going to have to be ready come these midterms, y'all. Our community, I feel that, and I don't know if this is prescient, prophetic. I don't know if what level of what climate of vocabulary that I'm using right now. But I am telling you that we're going to have work to do after the midterms, leading up to the midterms, because we got to come out and vote. We, especially after all these redistricting and gerrymandering, just because it's red doesn't mean that it stays red, right? They've tried to, and think about it. They had the maps done so quickly, they were already planning it. That means they had the inside track to something. But that's another, that's a whole nother broadcast that I don't even broach at this particular time. But we got to get ready, Black community. And I am here to help us. And so many voices are being raised up so we can be ready, so we won't be late, last, or lost in our community. So that's what we're going to be talking about today on The Culture Call with your boy L. Spencer Smith. Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth. Hey, got to take a little break, but I need you to keep right here. Buckle up. We're taking off. This is the world premiere. And we are back right here on The Culture Call. I'm telling you, I'm super excited about our topic today because I think that it gives us an opportunity to, how shall I say, it gives us an opportunity to groupthink. Yeah, right? It gives us an opportunity to think as a family, to think as a community about how we can respond to many of the things that are going on right now, you know. The thing that is very interesting is that if you're not careful, you will think that everything is good, everything is okay. We don't, you know, Bishop, why we got to do anything? Why we just can't be, you know, silent? That I think being loud is the thing that's got us in trouble. No, that first of all, our communities are not at fault, that they are being designed or have been designed to be what they are from the very beginning, right? And again, you would have to do a historical study on that. And some may agree, some may not agree. I also think that we have, as Black folks, got to have a responsibility to take upon ourselves to make our communities better. Now, historically, we know that whenever we do something for ourselves in our communities, and the history is replete with this. I mean, it's just a lot of history going to it. You know, whether it's, you know, the Black Wall Street in Tulsa, whether it's Rosewood or whatever, you know, all these different kinds of Seneca Village in New York, every time we find agency to do what we need to do in our communities, there's always also a particular animus, a particular sense of refusal that gives us that can just simply say, you know, that's them, let them do their thing, we over here doing our thing. And, you know, automatically they feel like, you know, we are not centered. They don't want us to be apart, but they want to be centered in what we're doing. And it's crazy historically. I'm not going to go there today. But we have to begin to come back to this table and strategize again. And I say this because our future, our generation, they feed our children media trash. You know, hip hop today is not the same as the hip hop that I grew up on. It was, when I grew up on hip hop, it was very conscious and even sometimes comical, but it was definitely conscious hip hop when I grew up with, you know, Run DMC, KRS-One, Public Enemy, you know, a whole lot of conscious rap that was going on at that time. But today, I'm like, what are you even saying? What are you feeding these kids? If we didn't grow up in my time, again, and all I can do is kind of compare and contrast. We didn't grow up with a love in hip hop. We didn't grow up looking into the lives of people. We had Cribs, and I think I was an adult when Cribs came out. So I didn't even grow up with that, you know. We were still fussing and fighting, trying to figure out why Michael Jackson wasn't on MTV, you know. That's back in the day when Michael Jackson was uber big, you know what I'm saying? And then my world was a cross between that and the gospel world. So, you know, it's just, we could walk down the street at night and did not have to worry about, you know, being accosted, have to worry about being abused by the police and all those different kinds of things. But the times are different now. The times are changing, right? And it's almost like we have allowed middle class living, let me say that, middle class living to destroy, better yet spoil us from not doing what we need to do as constituents of our communities. You know, we don't one of the highlights of my life was being able to go to my grandparents' house. And now children are not, they're not, you know, they're growing up in the same house with their grandparents, and their grandparents are old people. They're young people because, you know, babies are having babies now. They're being introduced to sex at an early age. And I mean, just so much that we have to address. But we have to address it, Culture Call. We cannot just lament about something. We have to address it and then put some actionary things, with regards to, you know, how are we going to remedy this? How are we going to remedy this? How are we going to get these, you know, I was so proud of the students in our church that graduated this year and the scholarships that they got and having options and choices and parents really pushing them. And that was one of the things that my wife and I began to teach our parents, that it's okay, but you got to let them go. If they got a full scholarship to XYZ, then, and that's where they want to go, let them go. Let them go. Trust what you put inside of them. And let them experience the world. Let them make their decisions. See if, because that the Bible is right, that when they get older, they won't depart from it. If you train them right, if you discipline them right, if you gave them the right wisdom, and if you gave them the right insight, if you poured into them right, they will, when they get old, they won't depart from it. They will not. Will they experiment? Absolutely. Will they come into their adulthood? You did too. Yes. So they're going to do all of that. Doesn't say that they're going to do anything criminal or nefarious or something that's going to endanger their lives, but they're going to discover. That's just the bottom line. They're going to discover just like you and I discovered, right? And I knew that I had a family support back home. When I was in Florida, I knew I had a family support back home. My fear now is that parents are not parents. They're friends to their children. They want to be their friends to their kids. And so they want because they've not been able to develop other relationships properly, they want their kids, you know, single moms want their boys, their girls to be their pseudo boyfriends or their best girl that they can go out and get their nails done and get their hair done. But are you parenting? Because you gotta, part of letting go is them putting away childish things. Let me say that again, because some of y'all didn't hear that in the back. Part of letting them go is them putting away childish things. You're gonna have to know, you know, one of the things that my mom and my dad said to me, okay, you're on this campus. You can't call us for everything. You can't call us for everything that's wrong. You're going to have to figure it out. You're going to, mom, dad, I need some, figure it out. Figure it out. You're going to be okay. Figure it out. Figure it out. Figure it out. You can play. You can sing. Surely there's a church that needs a musician. Go find you some money. I'm not going to pay for everything. No, go figure it out. And that is the rites of passage that is normal, you know, or that should be normal to our upbringing, to teach us how to be, yes, responsible, to teach us how to develop interpersonal relationships and how to communicate with people. But they can't do that if you won't learn to let them go and let them go properly. And so part of one of the things in our community is, yes, we have definitely got to talk about family. We have got to talk about the connection of family and when we're deciding and how we're deciding to have family, right? We're thinking about sex before family, when in fact we need to think about family before sex, because, it, you know, the byproduct of sex is family. It's copulation. It is conception, rather. It is a baby gonna come out of it. You know, if there's no birth control or something that prevents that, a baby may come out of that. And so you got to start thinking, am I old enough to take care of family? Am I old enough to be responsible to go to work to take care of family? Young men, you got to think about it. Right? We got to teach that again. We got to teach about, you know, keeping a child in the child's place and then launching them into adulthood and taking our hands off of the steering wheel of the bike. And yes, perhaps, yeah, even the training wheels, and letting them fall down so that they can what? Learn their balance as adults, as young adults. And I'm not seeing that happen. We're not cultivating their voices. We're not teaching them how to speak with clarity. You know, that these kids are making A's, but when they stand up to talk, you're like, what in the world did they just say? They're just mumbling. You know, they don't know how to write in cursive, which means they don't know how to apply a signature to official documents, because official documents ask for signatures. And then they said a printed name, and they took cursive out of school. So, you know, so how they can't write a check, you know, they can't sign a contract, they can't sign a mortgage papers, because all those things require signatures. Right. You see? And so one of the things that we've got to do is go back to brass tacks for the black family. Yes, a husband, father, a mother, wife, and children. And building toward the future. Absolutely. Husband and wife working as a team. Mother and father working as a team. Yeah. Absolutely. Begin to pull out and supplement and submit to each other, which is what the text really says. And not this Western, hegemony. A hegemony that puts men at the top and tell women to shut up and just go cook and be barefoot and in the kitchen. You know, pregnant in the kitchen. That's not what the Bible does not even support that. It is a partnership. That love comes from fathers. Nurture comes from fathers. That's the text. Fathers, nurture your children. Right? And so we got to build our families back from the ground up for another generation. Listen, just because it happened in your family doesn't mean that it was right. And I tell people that all the time. There are many things that my folks taught me that I grew up and figured out, that might have been right for them. But now, yeah, I got to figure out a better way to handle it with my wife and my children. I got to find a better way to communicate. I got to find a better way, because my wife is just as educated as me. My children are just as educated as me. And so, yeah, I've got to be like, okay, well, you know, I can't just talk to them like I want to talk to them just because I'm their parent. No, I've got to understand that I've raised them to be an adult, and I've got to view them as adults, and now I've got to change the way that I talk. Long as you don't get disrespectful, but I can't get disrespectful on them as well. You see? Right? Because part of the letting go means that I also have to transition in the way that I view them. And a lot of times in our community, it's hard to see our children as adults. And so the family gets frayed over sometimes disrespect. Let me say it again. The family all times disconnects and gets frayed and gets worn and just disintegrates because of a lack of mutual respect. That when they become adults, right? When they become adults, there's got to be some, you know, okay, all right, but you know what I taught you? Go back to that. No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to make you. I'm going to tell you to think about it. My natural genuflection is to build them out, to try to help them, try to pay for it, try to buy it so they can have it, so that it won't struggle, because I don't like to see them struggle. But seeing them struggle is important as the butterfly of causing their wings to get strong enough to fly on their own. You know why? Because I'm not going to always be here. Their mom is not going to always be here. And so I got to make sure that they can fly in my absence. They can soar when we're not around. And the only way to do that is, just like in nature, is not to help them out of the cocoon, to allow them to wrestle and find their way through hard times, find their way through times that look like, yo, I don't know how I'm going to make it. Well, I mean, I done been there, done that too. And I had to figure out how to make it. That's what my mom and my dad told me. They were like, hey, you okay, son, but you got to figure out how to make it. Mom, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, I don't know, babe. Figure it out. Pray and ask God. Like my granddaddy, did you pray about it? What did God say? He ain't say nothing. That's why I'm coming to you. Well, pray again. I'm like, and he can know the answer. Let me say it again. He can know the answer and won't say anything. But he'll say, figure it out. And that is the way. And it was that allowing me to go through that particular kind of pressure, allowing me to face my own reality and caused me to be like, okay, I figured it out. And I call him back with such glee. Hey, I figured out, you know, X, Y, Z. Well, I figured you'd do something, you didn't call me back. Well, when I called you, you didn't have no answer. So I knew the answer, but you had to figure it out for yourself. That's how it becomes a lesson. Now you can apply that to other things, because you're going to teach your kids that you can't bail them out of everything. You can't pay for everything. That's how you begin to build, to push them and to say, hey, this is a part of being a family. To always make sure that family is the cushion so you won't break yourself. But the family can't bail you out of everything. Sometimes you got to figure out, all right, am I going to fly in this? Birds do that. They take their fledglings up to a high mountain and drop them down. So they'll learn, and they're just flapping. And the parent is looking, and they won't let them kill themselves. They'll swoop in when they're getting close to the ground. They'll swoop in and put them back up again. And then they'll go back and drop them again until that bird learns how to fly. You see? And so all of that, I think one of the problems that we have in this generation is we've not done enough of that. We've given too many participation trophies, and we've not allowed in our community to let our next generation lose, to experience loss. Because loss is a lesson. Loss is not just about, you know, putting trophies, but loss is a lesson. What did I do wrong? And so we got to figure out how to do that and build family again. Build family again. Listen, got to take a break right here on the Culture Call with your boy L. Spencer Smith. Praise 93.3 FM. Go and get you something to drink, because I just put a lot on you. Hey, and invite somebody, getting ready for our second hour. But hey, we'll be right back.
All glory to God. Praise.
This is the world. And we are back. Right, your boy, L. Spencer Smith, right here on the Culture Call. I tell you, it's 11 a.m. and some change right here on Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK. Hey, welcome to all of our second hour listeners. Where y'all been? We've been waiting on you. We laid over just for you. So glad and grateful that you are on with us on today. Hey, it's plenty good room. Find you a seat. Buckle up. We're going to take off and we're going to all land together in a very safe place. And I'm just glad and grateful that you are here. You made it in. You slid right on in. No delays. That's right. You made it through security and everything. And you got your seat. So we're glad and grateful for all of that. Listen. And so we're having an amazing conversation about community today. But I want to remind you all that if you have something that you need me to announce, if you need me to announce it, send it to me at culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com. And I will let Lottie Dottie and everybody know the amazing things that you are doing for our community. Good deal. Good deal. Listen. I want to start off, speaking of community, I want to start this second hour off with one amazing friend of mine. She is known everywhere, I think galactically. I think other planets know who she is because she is so phenomenal in our area. She is my school board representative in District 5. All of that stuff. Yeah, she is the bomb. She does everything. Y'all, I got Erica Grant with me this morning, and I am super, super excited. Erica E., how you doing, girl?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm so glad, as always, to have you on. I tell you the truth, every time you... Girl, what? When are you going to sit down? First of all, congratulations on your doctorate.
Thank you.
You are inspiring me to keep on. I'm trying, girl.
Keep going.
I'm trying.
Keep fighting a good fight.
Oh, let me not tell you. Ain't nobody. I'm going to get you and Tyshawn, all of y'all who could have talked me out of this, because it is crazy. You know, I just told you I got residency coming up, and then comps, and then dissertation, got to go IRBs and all these different kinds of things.
Oh,
so
yes.
You are definitely an inspiration to all of us. But that ain't what we come here to talk about today. Y'all, Y'all know Erica, she is a hairstylist par excellence. You know, she has been doing this for years. Entrepreneur out of her wazoo. I mean, just building up our community. She is, I mean, listen, she is it. And she has something very, very, very special coming up this summer for us. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I need y'all to lean in because I'm going to need y'all to participate. When she finishes, I'm going to charge all of you all to participate in what she got going on. E, what you got going on now, girl?
Okay, so I have been doing the Headbangers Hair Show since 2006.
Wow.
And this year will be my 10th show in 20 years, and it will be the finale. This will be the last show.
The last show?
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute, huh? Wait a minute, the last show. You just opened a cosmetology school. What are you doing?
I did, and that's part of what I need to do. I need to continue to build my cosmetology school. Mm-hmm. And build other instructors and build my students and just do my clients. Yeah. I've been doing the shows on and off since 2006. I slowed down when my cousin passed, mm-hmm. and we talked. I didn't know it was his deathbed, but he spoke life in me. He said, "Cuz, you got to at least do 10 shows." I said, 10? At that point, I was probably at the sixth show. And mm-hmm. I was just like, no, I'm tired. I'm done with it. You know, I love hair shows. I love hair fashion. Beauty is my thing.
Yeah.
But putting it together and dealing with grown people is a whole nother ball game.
A pastor, right. I know exactly what you mean.
And so I have a deep love for it, you know, but he said 10, and just so happened this is the 10th year.
Yeah.
20 years later.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And so this Headbangers event, because I've not been fortunate enough, and it looks like I'll be at residency when this happens as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm upset about that. But nonetheless, tell me what goes on at a headbanger show.
At the Headbangers Hair Show, a young lady gave me that name, by the way, LaDonya Lawson, many years ago. But I started the hair show because when I opened my salon in 2006, I was trying to think of how can people, you know what Erica Grant do?
Uh-huh.
Learn about me, you know, my creativity, and I just want to do something for the community, bring people in, make some flip money, you know.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And so I came up with the Headbangers. I did. I opened up April 1st, 2006, my salon, and I actually planned for the show to be June 9th, but I had to wait on the host, so it ended up being in August. Long story short, that first show, I went around asking people, like, would they sponsor, and they was like, nah, they don't think it's going to do good here.
Right,
you know,
right.
XYZ.
Well,
500 people showed at the Bama Theater.
Wow.
Yes. That first show, I didn't know what I was doing. I don't know. And then it was highly anticipated. The next year, I had sponsors out the wazoo wanting to pay. And about 1,100 showed up the next year. And from there on, I did it. But again, I became tired.
Yeah, sure.
With putting it together. Now, I don't mind being a part of somebody's show, but right, to rent right. the building and right. do all that and to make sure it's did, like, I'm tired now because I've been on top of life planning.
Sure.
You know, because you wanted to go a certain way. And so that's how I got started with the shows. And at the show, you would expect other stylists will be a part of it. This time we have fashion. And I'm actually doing, like, just going back to where I started and,
sure.
and putting it all in one show.
Wow, wow. So then, will there be education? Because I know you're big on education. Will there be education at the Headbangers, or just for them to see? It's kind of like, is it like the Bronner Brothers experience in Atlanta, or a smaller version of that?
A smaller version. We do have vendors that will be on site.
Okay.
We, you know, it's more of a showcase and a show and entertainment. So it's hair, fashion, entertainment. I also will be, you know, showcasing some people that have helped me along the way.
Sure.
That was very instrumental in my, these last 20 years being an entrepreneur, but I've been in a salon right at 29 years. I worked for somebody else before I opened
wow.
up. Yeah,
wow.
So it'll just showcase that part, and I'm just closing. I'm being very obedient because it's bittersweet.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, anytime you close a thing, a chapter, you know, it is bittersweet. It goes with that. But I think when you're on task and on purpose, mm-hmm. that's a part of life.
Yeah.
You know, closing one business to start something something bigger and better mm-hmm. and things of that nature. And so what response is this year the community giving you?
Good. I have some great sponsors. I have some students, stylists, people that have their own boutique, a part of it, vendors. And I told myself when I've been talking about it, I was doing it for 2 years, but now I hit it crunch time, still doing so right. But like, right. It's been a great response.
Okay, good.
You know, and like I said, this is me tapping into my obedient season of my life, because regardless if it's just me and you there or if it's 1,000 people, we're having a show and I'm doing, I'm honoring my cousin with, I'm going to give you 10 shows.
Right. I mean, and that's good because, you know, Itimi was the bomb for me.
Right.
You know, my frat brother, just a bomb. And we just go back and forth. He at Jackson State, me at FAMU, always going back and forth because of our bands, you know, and things of that nature. But definitely an inspiration. He was an entrepreneur himself.
Right.
Making bow ties and uh-huh. things. And so, I mean, I'm glad that you're fulfilling those 10 shows. But I think in our community, you know, what would you tell these young people? Because I think that it doesn't have to end with you,
mm-hmm.
but what would you tell them in terms of, because you had to find something 20 years ago. You had to find something to say inside of yourself to say, okay, I'm going to grab a hold and I'm going to keep pushing in spite of the death of Itimi, who was very important to you, in spite of all of the challenges, degrees, you got all of your degrees in the last 20 years, you know,
yes.
all this, I mean, I know the story well. So what would you say to young stylists and people who have that aspiration and dream, but they don't have the mentorship?
I would tell not just young stylists, anyone, to continue your education.
Mm-hmm.
But especially in the beauty industry, you can never get enough education. When I went to Shelton, I didn't want to go,
uh-huh.
you know, because I felt like I already knew how to do hair.
Sure.
So again, you know, it goes back to my story. I tried to drop out of school in the ninth grade because I know how to do hair.
Right.
Well, when push came to shove, me having that talent wasn't good enough. I needed it on paper
right.
to be able to work in someone's shop. A lot of doors got shut in my face because I didn't have license. So mm-hmm. I knew then that I have to go to school. But not only that, continue education. So going to the Bronner Brothers shows, going to Premier, when people have different shows or different classes, I always go to them. If it was a time that I couldn't afford to, I save up to class for classes. It was a time I didn't understand color. I would go in the hair store. I would read the box. So I would tell people to always get all the education you can in the beauty industry. It's bigger than just doing a ponytail, you know.
Yeah.
You having to learn about the scalp is very important. Traction, alopecia is more than just braiding the hair. It's about how you pull in the hair, you know, color. A young lady literally just called me. She's in Canada
uh-huh.
for some advice, like
wow.
literally on my way over here.
Wow.
Somebody that used to come to me, she moved to Georgia, and she's traveling abroad doing different services. And she just called me on my way asking me about something in a store, you know. And so having people to still reach out, and I still will reach out.
Yeah.
You know, you can never learn too much. Now, some stuff I leave with certain people, like, girl, I'm not doing it. You know, but certain stuff you will learn, I can learn from a young girl because they are in the know. And so I just feel like the education piece, no, I'm not doing it at the show, but that because I have the school.
Right.
And it's a lot on me. So the other part I would tell the young stylists is know when to say no.
Yeah.
You know when to step down, learning your body so you can continue to grow. I'm in a class, now I know we were just talking about this, I'm in a class about stretching.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a new then, what I know now, I would, you know, my shoulder when hurt is bad.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that's something that I want to offer at the Charm Academy to the students, but it's slow but show that I'm getting through it, you know. And so health, education, health, and salon owners, you know, investing in a piece of property.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for your salon.
Yeah.
How you can really make money is being a salon owner.
Yeah.
So with that, I am a licensed realtor. I work for Visions Realty.
Wait a minute.
So letting the hair show go, it's giving me an opportunity to tap into the things that
The next. Okay.
And because it takes a lot of mind. It takes a lot of focus to do it. But I'm just being strategic about what I need to do with my life.
I mean, listen, and it's working. It's definitely working. Will we get an opportunity to see, you know, because you invest so much in the young people, in the next generation, you invest so much day to day in that. You're always someplace encouraging, you know, the young people, encouraging teachers. Will we get to see any of the students featured on the Headbangers?
You definitely will see the students. They did a little something last week, and they're working towards it. And at my school, the students range from the age of 19 to 60.
Wow.
Right. And so it's amazing to see. We have a new class. We'll be starting in August. We just graduated 18 students May 4th. So I asked God, you really want me to open a school? That's a bit much, right?
I bet, right?
But then, so it did. It's been open January 15th to 2025. So I've been open a little over a year and a half. And I said, God, you give me one student to tour with and figure this thing out. Well, I've been blessed with 18 to graduate, and I have 18 there. I mean, I have 8 now.
Wow.
And so I'll start with some more in August.
Yeah.
And so I have instructors that are, I have instructor students that are learning to be instructors in every discipline. So the disciplines are barbering, cosmetology, natural hair, nails, aesthetics, and instructor. And so it's just, you know, planting the seed and watching it grow.
Y'all, this is amazing, because I'm sitting here like, yo. I mean, she talking like, you know, well, okay, yeah, whatever.
It's sickening.
No, I mean, I get it. I mean, but it's so good for, I think it's so good for our community, that the entrepreneurial spirit that you bring to the table, and so with this last Headbangers hair show, what do you hope that your legacy will be in beauty here in Tuscaloosa? What are you working on? Because everyone who's a visionary always has legacy in mind, right? You know that if what are you trying to write right now?
Well, with the school, first off, and I'm not being biased to men, but with our women, that we can do anything that we put our minds to. Of course, we need our wonderful men behind us. Yeah. My husband is absolutely
DJ is absolutely
the
amazing.
Best support system. But building our women up. There's a lot of reason why I do a lot of things that I do. Watching my mom, she poured into us tremendously and be such a strong woman. So showing them that you can own a piece of property or commercial property and open up your salon. You can go out and negotiate and do different things and, you know, with your school and bring people in and educate others and be able to walk away and trust people. Like me being here now, I have an instructor that's there.
Yeah.
I had to build it somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and so just letting other young ladies know that they can do it is very important. And teaching them about some better than none. So you can't make all the money at the beginning.
Right.
You
right.
have to let it, you have to watch a seed grow.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And so that's one thing that I try to encourage them, a lot of young ladies and older ladies to do.
That's good, because I think what they're watching on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter
is like microwave success.
Right, it's microwave success, and that's kind of ruining that entrepreneurial spirit, because a lot of them start and they stop and get so disappointed. And so I'm glad that you said that you have to learn how to watch your seed grow. It takes discipline.
Yeah.
To watch your seed grow and bear fruit.
And it gets hard.
I bet it does.
Yeah, but hell has always, everything that I have acquired financially has come from me understanding about, you know, doing hair. I had it rough because I had a bad attitude about not going to school.
Mm-hmm. And now she got a doctor.
Right. So I didn't understand. And yeah. So that I needed to get in the book and really learn how to enhance people's beauty,
right,
you know,
right,
properly.
Right.
And not put the relaxer on the scalp, but put it at the ends if you're doing a virgin relaxer, and then go back, because the scalp warms. It's just a lot of stuff that you could just up and do, but you learning is just a big part of me now.
Yeah.
And so I went back after I got my license to do had this lady at Shelton. She was like, you need to get your instructor license. I was like, lady, you crazy. I barely wanted to get that license. So graduated from high school, 7 months pregnant with my son. Tried so hard not to go to school for hair. I went to school for, I was working at the hospital too. So I started working at the hospital when I was 18. And I was working at a shop. So at the hospital, I cleaned up for $6 an hour. So the ladies used to be telling me, oh, you got to do 8 steps cleaning up. I'm like, ma'am, y'all pay me $6. It don't add up. 8 steps for $6, like, that was crazy.
Not at all.
So I wanted to do hair, but I was so mad at myself about getting pregnant.
Right.
And so I was just like, I do something different. So I seen somebody, doing child care when we did child care in high school. I said, no, I don't want to keep nobody cheering on that. There was a lot. You know, I was like, no. And then, nothing against the cheering, but I was like, that's not what I want to do. Then a younger lady, she was like, do respiratory. And so I was cleaning up one day, and I was going to get in the respiratory program, try to at Shelton, and I heard the trach. You know, the trach make the little noise. Uh-huh. I was like, I can't do that either.
I know.
So I realized early on that, you know, my gift was in my hands. I had been doing hair since I was 9 years old in my mama's house. Like, wow. I always had a clientele. And so I did that on the side, but I didn't feel like I needed to waste time to go to school for it.
Right.
But after that, once I dove into it and made $300 on a Thursday versus making $300 every other week at the hospital, I figured out, like, maybe I should get into this. And started going to the store and seeing, like, okay, so I can spend this much and make this much.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love it, you know. Right. And so that's when I just really had, you know, got clientele and people looking for me to do their hair. And so I got into it, and the lady was like, you need to be an instructor because I love to help. And I said, no, ma'am, I don't want to be an instructor. I just want to do hair and be done.
Right, right.
Well, I ended up going to instructor school. And then she told me, well, you need to get a bachelor's degree. I said, you really pushing it. It was the instructor down there at Shelton. I love Miss Shirley Nix. And so I said, absolutely not.
Wow.
And when a position came open, I needed that bachelor's degree to run that program and did not have it.
Wow, okay.
And Etima also told me, you need to go back to college and get at least a bachelor's degree,
right.
And I was so mad at myself. And in 2013, I made a vow I said, I'm going to go and at least get my bachelor's degree. And it took me 6 years. It still, I met so many wonderful people, ran for office, did the most, ran the shop, family, and finally finished at Stillman. Well, I was sitting down at a conference with Dr. Daria.
Uh-huh.
He said, you need your master's degree. I said, did you talk to me, Nick? Y'all got to be crazy. I'm not going back to get a master's. I badly wanted to get the master's degree. I went back and got the master's.
Wow.
And he was like, too close not to get this doctorate. So 5 years later, here I am.
Wow.
And what do I want to do with that? I have tapped into business, like business schools and different things and people reaching out for me to speak. And
right.
I even have a contract to only teach entrepreneurship, you know, on a certain day.
Right.
And so, I mean, I guess it just evolved in letting the people know that you don't have to just be behind the chair.
Correct.
There's so much we can do as cosmetologists.
And I think, you know, having talked to ladies and barbers, mm-hmm. you know, stylists and barbers about, you know, their next, they don't have I'm going to be behind this chair because they're getting love. You know, with the $40 a mm-hmm. day or $40 a cut or, you know, $100 a style. Mm-hmm. And they think that, you know, but like you said, their knees are wearing out. They're not taking care of their health properly. Mm-hmm. You know, And to hear your journey and to say, hey, underneath all of that, the underpinning of that is education. You need that. You're going to need
education.
That.
You need the education. Also, with your insurance, you need, you know, your insurance. I mean, I tell the world, I'm in IRS trouble right now because I did not understand, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm learning, and I had to go through that. I take a lot of things. I used to get so mad at myself, Bishop, but I say, Lord, I thank you for all the things you have put me through. So now the next young lady don't have to go through IRS trouble.
Exactly.
The next young lady don't have to go. She will understand it to not just rent a building and not understand what's zone here.
Yeah.
So it's young ladies that rent buildings. I've seen it. And they can't even open their shops because it's not zoned. So having that education that I got, even going through a zoning process.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to do hair. Why do I need to know about zoning? Well, I need to know that I can't run a salon. I bought an old property, an old house.
Uh-huh.
It was residential. You have to go back and get
commercial.
Yeah, try to get a commercial. They wouldn't do a commercial.
Right.
You had to go before a board for that.
Correct.
But they did it BGO, which is Business General Office.
Right.
Then you still can open up the shop. You had to go back to a special exception board to be able to operate a salon. You just want to do hair. Who got time for that? Then T-Dot telling you you can't pull number 9 calls.
Yep.
So just digging into and asking questions. No question is stupid, you know. Right. That just was a lot to put on my head at through the years, and so here I am.
Man, I don't know about everybody else, but I am certainly grateful because you are proof that it can be done.
I think
one of the things that in this generation that's apathetic, this generation that's, man, I ain't got no future, let me just do this, let me just do that, who's not even pushing to go forward. I think whenever you're seeing, when your story, because you need to write the book next, but we'll leave that alone. You need to write the book about this, but nonetheless. Because, I mean, you're telling bestseller information, because it, from when you start, and first of all, you're saying that where you start does not mean that's where you're going to end.
Mm-mm.
And you got to learn how to start from somewhere. And so I think that's great. Listen, give us the information, the 411 on the Headbangers. How can we get tickets? What date is it? Everything.
Okay, the Headbangers Hair Show is next Saturday, June 6th. Doors open at 5:30. The show starts at 7. The doors open at 5:30 for vendors. Come sit down. Wear something. It's Miami style. Wear something fun, cute, you know, sit down and have a good time. The show is at the Bryan Conference Center.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Tickets are on Eventbrite. Just key in Headbangers Hair Show. The tickets are $49. That includes your parking on the UA.
Okay.
You will get a code for parking. And so that's another thing. Like the Bryan Conference Center, the Bama Theater, the like renting places and the different rules and stuff. I was just like, you know, yeah, this is definitely my last show.
I bet it is.
Yeah, I have another party one day, but it's been bittersweet to say this is my last show.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, just you got the memories, the all the things that go on with it.
All the different DJs, the hosts, the judges, and so it's been a lot of memories and people reaching out that have been a part of the show for years, and so it's just a lot. A girl that used to help me all the time, she passed away, but you know, just keeping those people memory alive.
Sure.
It's important.
I think that is good. Culture Call, Erica Grant. She is thebomb.com. And you need to be at the Bryant Conference Center. Get your tickets from Eventbrite. So all you got to do is search Headbangers Head Show. They're
$49. $49 some change.
Right, $49. $50. This they going
to be. I got it down because once you on Eventbrite, they charge you, which I'd rather just chew whatever they charge instead of having paper tickets. That's something that I used to do. My mama found a picture of an old ticket.
Oh, Lord.
She was like, you getting these tickets again? I said, absolutely not.
I've been that. Exactly. And it's, the style is Miami style, so that's really colorful. You got your flowers and you got all of that. So just all you got to do is
little fancy things
that Miami has a little Caribbean to it, little, you know, Hispanic kind of situation. Go ahead and get that. Find out your dress. Get your ticket and go to the Headbanger Show. Go there for me because I can't go. I will be in Hampton, Virginia. And
the next day, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The next day will be a celebration party.
Okay.
At the River Market.
Oh, y'all.
And it's denim.
Huh?
So we will be celebrating. My husband will be 45 this year.
Wow.
My graduation party.
Oh.
My salon. Been open 20 years, and the last celebration is we ending the era with the hair show. So it's free. Just come with your denim on.
Wow.
Be some nice snacks, some dirt.
You see?
Music.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. So guess what? Y'all got two days with Erica.
We'll be tired.
That's right. You got one day at the Bryan Conference Center, and the next day will be at the River Market. You don't want to miss it. Definitely want to make sure that you are there. Erica, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Culture Call, we support you so much. I'll sponsor somebody because I can't be there. My heart's so hurt. But
Listen.
I want to be there, but I gotta catch up with you and get my doctorate. I gotta catch up with you and get my doctorate.
You gotta disappear for a few minutes.
Just a few minutes.
At night and stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Culture Call, I tell you, we got the best in Tuscaloosa with Erica Grant with us here today. Don't forget about it. 20 years later, Headbangers is ending. You gotta be in the place to be at the Bryant Conference Center. Go ahead to Eventbrite, search out Headbangers Hair Show. You can get your tickets, and then the next day you can be at the River Market celebrating DJ's 45th, celebrating 20 years of the salon opening and the end of the Headbanger Show. You don't want to miss it. You gotta be in the place to be. Listen, we gotta take a break, but hey, I need you to keep it locked right here. Go ahead and support E. I promise you will not be disappointed. Right here on the Culture Call, Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth. We'll be right back.
This is the world premiere.
And we are back on the Culture Call, and I'm telling you, we are having an amazing day with an amazing conversation. Hey, I want to give a shout out again to Miss Erica Grant, Dr. Erica Grant. She did an amazing job on today, and I tell you, her life is such an inspiration, how she started out not even wanting to go to school and now how she just acquired her doctorate, but she's using it to empower businesses and entrepreneurs, and I pray and I hope that we are a part of what the energy that she brings to the table. We need to carry that on in our community as well. Listen, and so again, I believe that we have a very profound opportunity to make certain that what we do really helps the next generation, because isn't that what it's all about? That we are not to be hoarders of information, hoarders of the inheritance and the benefits that we gain through our lives, that each one reach one, teach one. That's exactly what we need to do. And so doesn't matter what the adversarial, the opposition is, the adversaries that we face, the obstacles that we face, we need to amalgamate as a people, as a community, to make certain that we do what we need to do so that they can find strength, the next generation can find strength to overcome the hurdles that they will face. Because best believe, every generation will have its own hurdle. But as we land this plane today, I want to make us understand that, again, all of us have a responsibility. Men, you have a responsibility. Women, you have a responsibility. Young people, you have a responsibility. And yes, even the children have a responsibility. That, yes, it takes all of us to make sure that we are fortified and solidified as community to go forward toward the future. And that future can definitely be acquired if we learn that none of us can afford to be spectators or standby people that only criticize but not construct. And so that's very important. And when you understand about the importance of community, that it does, yes, take a very village to raise a child. But guess what? Let me amplify that. It takes more than just a village to raise a child, but it takes a village to raise a village. Let me say that again. It takes a village to raise a village. That none of us, no man is an island, no man stands alone. It takes the village to raise strong men. It takes the village to raise strong women. It takes a village to raise strong young people. And again, it takes a village to raise children. And so we're not losing anything in this moment. We are not losing one single solitary thing in this moment. If we learn, if we but learn that we, yes, do it better when we do it together. So, yes, we've got to start working on the family front. We got to start working on the economic front, the religious front, the faith front. We've got to do all that we can do to make sure that our families and our economies, our relationships are solid. And then we got to work, I guess, even on the political front, on the societal and the cultural front. Why is that important? Glad that you asked. The reason why that is important, because we are not just trying to target one area, but I believe that there ought to be a multiplicity of and layers of what we need to do. There needs to be a stratification that happens within community that causes us to know what our places are. We've got to make certain that we are good men. And how do we define being a good man? Good man, right? A good men, good women. How do we define that? Well, the text tells us good men, good women leave an inheritance to their children's children. In other words, that our children should not be empty-handed when they come on the scene. That they ought to have something in their hand, that they ought to have something that's given to them by the previous generation, so that we can say, go ahead and run on. Do your race. Run your race. That means that we have to learn how to let go. We have to learn how to teach them how to use their wings. We have to learn how to teach them how to soar. We have to learn how to teach them how to move to the next level of life. And so, hey, it takes all of us to do that. When you see an encouragement, when you see a child that needs help, when you see a young man that's trying to do well, trying to get to college, when you see a person, an individual that's trying to make certain that, hey, I want to do better in school, we don't just look at them, we don't laugh at them, we don't let the bullies and all of these other anti-forces in the world take over. No, we stand and we support them. We let them know that absolutely you have a community that is not only behind you, but you have a community that takes care of its own. And that's what we have to do, Culture Call. And we have to do it unabashedly. We have to do it with vim. We have to do it with fervor. We have to do it with knowledgeability, that we cannot just, you know, I don't have anything against, you know, anybody that shows up how they show up. For me, after the end of this degree, I would have 3 degrees. I mean, that was cultivated from my family. All the people in my family have degrees, a million, right? And so it was just natural for me. And I encourage my children to do the same. They got their master's degrees, and all of these things, because I think education is still the key to the future. And I'm not just talking about an academic education, but I'm also talking about interpersonal education. I'm talking about learning how to read the world, how to read society, how to read culture, and not only learn how to read it, but also how to interpret it and place yourself in it, because all of us have a place in this world. Let me say it again. Everybody, young, old, rich, poor, all of us have something to do in this world. Listen, we don't like mosquitoes, but I believe God created them for something. We just don't know what it is yet. And it's more than to bite us and suck out blood. But I tell you, I believe that everything has been created with a reason and a purpose. And it is the discovery of that purpose that causes us to be better. Yes, it is when you discover your purpose and I discover mine, and we keep our eyes on our own paper, absolutely, yeah, and make our own grade, I believe that there is an interconnection that happens when everybody does what they are supposed to be doing. And so, hey, I'm just encouraging you as a community, don't sit on the sidelines. You have to get up, get out, and do something. Here it is from Sister Act 2. Whoopi says, if you want to be somebody, if you want to go somewhere, you got to wake up and pay attention. And I am telling you, you definitely got to wake up and pay attention. That's right. I get it. I understand it. But all of us have a narrative, and now it is time for us to do something with it. And let's go forward and build community. Hey, I see the runway, and I got to land in just a few minutes, but I need you to stay exactly with me until I come back. And I will be back right here on the Culture Code with your boy, L. Spencer Smith. Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK, The Truth. Well, family, we've ending another show, and I'm telling you, I am so glad and grateful that you all have been with me for the last 2 hours. I tell you the truth, but hey, we have had a wonderful conversation about our community and how we can fortify and make sure that we are empowered for the future, not just for us, but for our children's children. Don't forget it. What you do today will affect your children and your grandchildren tomorrow. So let us all come together and make sure that we are doing the best we can do for each other. Listen, as my grandmama and my mama would say at the end of every phone call, I love you a bushel, I love you a peck, and I love you a hug around the neck. This has been your boy, L. Spencer Smith, right here on The Culture Call. Hopefully blessing your life, because you have definitely blessed mine. But hey, don't fret. I'll be back tomorrow from 10 to 12, and we will make sure that we'll have another powerful conversation. But until then, be a blessing to somebody. Be nice and kind to someone. And make sure that if you can't brighten someone else's day, please don't darken it, right? Have a beautiful day, Culture Call. Catch you soon.